All right, moment we've all been waiting for. I want to invite Pastor Shane Elliott to come up. You know, this guy, hey, he's a fantastic muso. Fantastic muso and infuses all his funky grooves into the worship. That's really great, you know. And a good preacher as well. So let's be enriched by Shane this morning.
Yeah, pressure's on now. Thanks. Hey, I'll just get this turned off. I always find it funny when people call me pastor. Because I know every reason I shouldn't be. Yeah. It's funny when people get up to preach. Because, yeah, I know everything that disqualifies me from standing up here and sharing the word of God. And yeah, I know you do too. A lot of you do know it. And because I sit there on Sundays. I sit there, I listen to messages, go to other churches. And sometimes you hear a message and you think, I know that person that's standing on that stage telling me that isn't dealing with that in their own life. What gives them the right to, you know, tell me about it? And you're sitting there going, you know, I'm not going to listen to you. And I remember God hitting me one day and he goes, you know what? That's me speaking through them. And he said, you know, hear the word of God. You know, faith comes by hearing. You hear the word of God. Don't see the person who's speaking it, but hear what God's telling you through that person. And there's always something that will disqualify you from doing, you know, the work of God. But, you know, there's no reason not to do it. And, yeah. I was thinking, God gave us a great commission, didn't he? Go preach the gospel to all the world. He didn't say go preach the gospel when you've got your life right. He said just go and preach the gospel. You can do that from the moment you become a Christian. In fact, you can do that before you're a Christian too. There's actually stories in the Bible of people telling the world about Jesus. They weren't even Christians themselves, you know. So, you know, don't let your own life and your own circumstances determine when you can go and talk to people about God. Don't let your, you know, your background, what's happened to you in the week, stop you from getting up there. Yeah, it's a lot of things. If you don't think I know a lot of things, ask my wife, Wendy. She will tell you. She can let you know every reason why I shouldn't be up here. But she won't, because she's nice to me. Yeah. And young people, your age, that should never disqualify you from talking about God. Yeah, because quite often you go, I'm too young to speak to this person. God nailed Jeremiah for saying that. He said, do not ever say I'm too young. You go and speak to people. It doesn't matter how old they are, how young they are. You can speak to them. If you're at the other end of that scale too, never say you're too old to speak to someone who's young either. Don't go, I don't understand their language and lols and all of this and their hip-hop music and whatever they're doing. Go and talk to them about God. You know, there's nothing that disqualifies you from talking to someone about God. He never said that. He never said you had to be a certain age. Or yeah. And your culture. Did he say anything about your culture either? No, he didn't. Jonathan and Sheila, I'm telling you this. People are going to tell you guys that you shouldn't be, you're not Australians and you shouldn't be in Australia preaching. Yeah. Crap. That's what I'm telling you. You throw that out. That will disqualify you if you listen to it. Do not listen to it. God called you to preach it well out, and that's it. Yeah? Cool. That's not my message. It's not even my introduction. There you go. We're off to a good start, aren't we? I've already got distracted. Yeah. Let's pray. Father, I just want to commit today to you and commit this message to you. Father, I pray through all my bumbling words or whatever that you speak through and that you anoint these words and they go in. And Father, they find fertile ground, Father. They find hearts that are willing to hear and to hear your word, Father. And that that not a person leaves this place today without being changed in some way, without not taking a step on their journey with you and a step in their relationship with you. That Father, each one of us is further along that road, that we go out different and we go out better than what we came in, Father. Amen. Pastor Nigel, he asked me to share a bit of our story and to preach a message on journeys. That's what been the series of going on journeys and so on. So I don't particularly like sharing personal stories, but I will because Pastor asked me to. Particularly wanted me to share about some of our struggles and how we've managed to stay strong in some of them. Truth is, I don't really know. Probably could end right there, couldn't I? You do what you do. We're on a lot of journeys, so that's my wife Wendy, by the way, in the red jacket, not to make a stand out, but yeah, for those who don't know my wife. So we're on a lot of journeys, as we all are. You know, we're on a journey with work, which is an exciting, interesting one. We're on a journey with our marriage. That's the easiest one. It's blissful every day, and it's just wonderful. On a journey with our kids, that's, learning how to be parents, that's just fun. On a journey with church, what we do in church, and, you know, all the things that are here. On a journey as a musician, you know, that's actually probably the most low-pressure journey I'm on. It's probably a great lesson in doing a journey with really talented people, because when you stuff up, they'll just cover for you. So it's, point one. Yeah, do it with other people. So I'll share some of our stories. I guess the main story and the main reason Pastor Nigel asked me to share was more about our struggle. We've gone on a journey with our finances, and it's been an up-and-down journey. It's been an up-and-down journey. And there's been some struggles in there. And to let you know, this where it started for me, this whole journey, was actually probably about 10 years ago when we first came to C3 Fremantle. Pastor Andrea, I'm going to blame her. She just spoke to me one day. She really nailed me about this. She just came up, and at the time, I'd just taken over being music director, and kind of my whole life was centered around music. She goes, you know what? Music is not what you're going to be about in the house of God. She just said, I reckon there's more, and it's going to do with business. It's something to do with business. And so that set me on a journey. That's actually stuck with me as a word. A lot of other people have kind of said things, but that one has really stuck with me. And which, by the way, if you have a word for someone, just tell them, because it might be something in season. It might set them off on a journey. And I don't know whether I forgive her yet for that journey, but, you know, I'm on that journey. And so at the time, it didn't really mean much. It didn't mean much then. I was working several part-time jobs at the time, including running a very small business, which was just me at that point. Basically, it's all my main role in church is music. I've got here. Looking back, I kind of wish she hadn't said anything. So I also want to talk about a journey in the Bible. So I'll go through this, and there's some really good points in this journey. And a lot of us, we're either starting a journey, we're on a journey, or hopefully we're ending a journey. But generally, we're always on a journey of some description. And so there's this great story in the Bible, and it's a story in 1 Samuel chapter 30. And it's a story of David at Ziklag, which was a town. And it sums up a lot of points about different types of struggles we go through. It also demonstrates why David was able to overcome adversaries, problems, and his own inadequacies. And it's a story I just keep coming back to. So I'll read this out. So we're going to do a bit of Bible reading this morning. So 1 Samuel chapter 30. So now it happened, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag, attacked Ziklag, and burned it with fire. And had taken captive the women and those who were there from small to great. They did not kill anyone, but carried them away and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and there it was, burned with fire. I always wonder what else could it be burnt with anyway. And their wives, their sons, and their daughters had been taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him lifted up their voices and wept until they had no more power to weep. That's pretty bad. And David's two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite, had been taken captive. Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him. I think you're having a bad day. Because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them and without fail recover all. It's an amazing story. And I've got 9 points to make about the story. I'm more of a 4-point person. Don't know why I went for 9 today. Probably go for 7 if I was very religious. But my last point is this. Point number 9 is that God will restore all. You'll recover all. If you're on a journey and you've incurred loss, basically, there's been some cost in you doing that journey, whether it's starting it off or going on it. There's been a cost in terms of finances. There's been a cost in terms of time. There's been a cost in terms of your dreams and visions. The deal is God will restore all. And how do I know this? Am I saying this as a feel-good exercise? No, not really. There's 3 reasons. One, because I know these journeys are often quite painful. These aren't my 9 points. These journeys are often quite painful, and I don't know about you, but I don't particularly like pain, so I wouldn't be saying this. Yeah, it's the title of my message. Keep calm and push through. Point two is this, Galatians 6:7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. If you're sowing into a journey, you can go back if you want. Basically, if you're on a mission from God, whatever you sow into it, you are going to get back, and usually with a lot of interest. And number three, it's God's nature to restore things, to bring you back to into a place of restoration. In fact, the whole Bible is just a story of restoring people at the end of the day. That's what it's about, and we'll get to that at the end. Bit of background to the story. So David had gone out. I haven't got to point one yet, but we'll get there. David had gone out to go to battle with the Philistines and basically been living in the land of the Philistines because he'd been running away from Saul, who was trying to kill him in Judah and Israel. And so the Philistines had then said, you know, there was one king who kind of trusted him. The rest said, nah, he's going to turn on us and kill us. And probably right, he probably would have. And this was the battle. This was the final battle where the Philistines fought King Saul. And this is where King Saul actually died, was in this battle, Saul and his son Jonathan. Previous to that, Saul had been rejected by God because he failed to obey God in his command to actually wipe out the Amalekites. So the whole problem was that Saul had failed to kill the Amalekites, and here we see. So it kind of brought judgment on Saul and also created a problem for David. And the Amalekites were basically this group of people who, since the Israelites had left Egypt, had basically been a problem for Israel. So when they came out of Egypt, the Amalekites were the first of the peoples who actually attacked the Israelites as they came through the desert. And basically they were attacked from the back. The Bible says they would come and they'll just get the stragglers, all the people who are too weak to do anything. They would come and they would attack them and pull them out. And so God brought judgment on them. In Deuteronomy, he says that he had promised to wipe them out for what they'd done to Israel. And so they keep popping up in the Bible. The battle with, some of you would know the story of Moses, you know, where he holds up his hands and Joshua and the army went. That was a battle against the Amalekites. That was that battle. Later on, there's a story of one of the judges, Ehud, who had to fight the king of Moab and the Amalekites. So that was only about two generations after Joshua. Gideon, you know the story of Gideon? That was against the Amalekites. So these people just kept popping up over and over and over again. Kind of like ants, you just can't kill them. Yeah. So in 1 Samuel 15, Saul was commanded to completely wipe them out, but he didn't. He spared the king. So and he basically disobeyed God. He spared the king, and he obviously spared some others because we're only talking a few chapters later, and here there's enough of them to go through the land and to start wiping out Ziklag and causing problems. So my first point is this. Point one, which you've already seen, is deal with problems completely. How I deal with my problems. The problem existed because Saul had not carried through on God's commandment. Yeah, that was why the problem existed for David and then for generations afterwards. The problem outlived Saul. The problem actually outlived David. It survived until the reign of King Hezekiah, which is about 300 years later, because David had failed to obey God's command in dealing with a problem. My second point about this is stay in God's country. So, and what I mean by that is, I found a road sign, I thought it was quite cool. David had drifted out of the land. So David was in a place that he wasn't living in Israel because he was running away from King Saul, but he'd actually moved out of the promised land. He'd moved out of that land. Yeah, it was God's country. And he was actually doing things in that place. While he was living in Ziklag, he was doing things he really wasn't called to do. He was actually going around and he was raiding towns and he was wiping everyone out. He was just killing them all so there was no survivors, which is pretty rough if you think about it. The Amalekites were actually kinder to David than he was to the Philistines. At least they spared the people and took them with him. He would go and wipe them out. So he was not in a good place. And basically, if we're using church language, we would call him backslidden. Essentially, he was just living in a place he shouldn't have been and doing things he shouldn't have been doing. He was never called to do. And I understand, being in the right place can be hard at times, but it's better than the alternative. Yeah. So, got a little note here. Part of our story was Wendy and I, and we've known each other for a long time, and it's the fault of the man who's sitting next to Wendy right now, Dave. And yes, you introduced us. Basically, when we first started seeing each other, we weren't really in God's country. We were both Christians, but we just weren't going to church. And we weren't in a good place. And we weren't living away. It would classify as glorifying God. But when we got engaged, one of the first things we decided to do was that we would just get back into church. So we did this from the time we got engaged. And happened to be, it was actually C3 Perth version 2, which had just started. It was in Atwell. And so we started going there. Long story, which is kind of how we got to here in the end. And we've been along a few church adventures on the way, as we all do. And let me encourage you, you know, churches aren't perfect. There'll be things that hurt you. There'll be struggles along the way. There'll be some wonderful times within a church. But it's better to be in the church than out of it. It's better than the alternative of not being in God's house. Deal with those struggles. And you know what? The church is a big thing. It is really big. It's a global enterprise. You know, if this particular flavor doesn't suit you, find one that suits you. But for goodness sake, get into one and lock in there and just go. Different flavors of ice cream, but they're all still ice cream. We're all ice creams. Moving on. So let me get back into this Bible. So verse 6, chapter 30. So it says, "Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters." Point three is this. Sometimes you will stand alone. You know, here's David, and you know, I'm not saying it will get as bad for you as it did for David, but there'll be times on your journey that you will stand alone. And it's not because there's not people around you who don't care. It's just because no one owns the vision for your journey like you do. And no one can possibly understand it the same way you do or own into it the way that you do. The only person inside your head is you. I know there might be some voices there talking to you. But what I'm saying is only you know your thoughts, your feelings, your worries and your concerns. Yeah. Only you will know what's going through your head that applies to a particular situation. And doesn't mean there's not well-meaning people around you. They're simply not you. And it's at these points when you're standing alone that you actually need to decide what to do. You know, you can imagine David sitting, you know, just there, and he's thinking, you know, up to the northwest of me is the Philistines, who essentially most of them want to kill David, is the deal. Up to the northwest of him was, you know, there was Judah and basically King Saul, who was trying to kill David. To the southwest of him was just a great big desert. To the southeast of him was basically the Amalekites, the Moabites, the Edomites, people who wanted to kill David as well. I mean, he was kind of in the middle of all these people who just wanted to kill him. And then think about this, he's sitting there and then he's got 600 men around him, men of war who basically want to kill him as well. And he's sitting there thinking, what do I do? Realizing that the decisions he'd made along the way had led them to this point. And so, you know, what do you do at this point? And what do you do when your life's, you know, all these pressures are coming in? You're sitting there and there's phone calls coming in and it's, you know, some business thing and someone's saying, I want this done, I need it done now. And, you know, there's bills not being paid on time. You're getting these reminder notices and, you know, you've got kids playing up in the background. Oh, those sounds. And the pressures of life, you know, what do you do when all this comes to you? And all of these things, probably on their own, are not that bad, but when they all come at once, what do you do? And this is one of David's, I think, probably the points that makes him stand out. The rest of verse 6 is this. I'll read the whole thing. It says, "Now David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in his God, in the Lord his God." My fourth point is this: strengthen yourself in God. And one of David's greatest strengths is that he always ran to God. He got the direction right. You know, I reckon most of the time we run from God. Something goes wrong, we do something wrong, we run from God. Run to God. David learnt to seek God when he was on the back of a hillside as a young kid who'd be out there writing music and tending to sheep and fighting off lions and so on. He learnt to go to God then. He learnt to turn to God when he fought Goliath. He went to Goliath and said, "The Lord my God will defeat you." He ran to God when he had to go and fight this massive, you know, man. David turned to God when he got convicted later on when he was king. He got convicted about adultery and murder. David committed adultery. He committed murder. God convicted him. What did he do? He went, "You're right." And he turned and he ran to God. The very person that was convicting him of it, he ran to him. That's the secret of David's success. David turned to God when he was evicted from Jerusalem, when his son Absalom took over. He turned to God. You know, David turned to God. It was never about the circumstances he was in, good or bad. He learned to turn to God. He learned to run always to God. That was the place where he knew he would find his redemption. He'd find his answers. And in this particular story, as I said, for the in this situation, it was through a run of bad decisions. He'd basically run away from King Saul and was living with the Philistines. He was living in a place, you know, he's doing things he shouldn't have been doing. He was, you know, he wasn't called to do. Here's the thing, though. When it got to this point, he turned to God. And we shouldn't let what has happened in our past stop us or prevent us from turning to God. You know, don't ever, I'll read this, do not ever, 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 ever let guilt about your past stop you from approaching God. Guilt is a killer. And when I would say your past, I could talk 5 minutes ago when you had an argument with your spouse or whatever it is. We haven't had an argument this morning. But when you've had an argument with someone, or it could be 10 years ago, something that's still nagging you. Whatever it is, do not let that circumstance stop you from approaching God. God's where the answer is. Don't let the guilt stop you from getting to that answer. It's just robbing you. So what has happened in your past will not determine which way you run. And let me say this, sometimes we do things, we regret them, but you cannot alter your past, but you can bring your past to the altar, yeah? So let me say that again, you cannot alter your past, but you can bring your past to the altar. So you can bring it to God and say, God, here it is, here's all the mess, here is everything I've done, all the wrong stuff, all the right stuff, the whole lot, it's yours. I'm glad at the altar, do with it what you can. He can do a lot with it too. Paul wrote this in Romans 8:38, one of the best verses. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, so nothing that's living, nothing that ever has lived, nothing, you know, death itself can't stop it, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Yeah? I'll read that again. I am persuaded that neither death nor life, there's nothing living, nothing that ever has lived. There's no power in death, nor angels, nor principalities. So none of these spiritual beings around, nor any powers, it says. There's no powers, there's no ruler, there's no one. There's no things present, there's nothing in this world right now. There's nothing that is going to come, anything in the whole future of the earth, of your whole journey. There is no height, so there's no problem that is so big. Big that is going to stop you from the love of God. There's no depth. There is absolutely no point of depression you can get to, or so point you can come to so low that's going to separate you from God, nor any other created thing. There is absolutely nothing that can separate you from the love of God. You know what? I thought there is actually one thing, and it's you. It actually is you. It's this. God turning your back. That is simply the only thing that will ever stop you experiencing God's love. There is nothing else that can ever, ever stop you. Yeah, I've gone off on a tangent again. Anyway, right. So, moving on. Run to God. What's that point? Strengthen yourself in God. 1 Samuel, so 30, verses 7 to 8. So just going through the story. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, please bring the ephod here to me. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. So David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I pursue this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, without fail recover all. My fifth point is this, submit your plans to God. Yep, so if you've got plans, submit them to God. It's a wise man who does that. If David had done that in the first place, he probably wouldn't have been in this predicament. You know, if he'd just gone and said, hey, God, should I actually go and fight with the Philistines? I'm pretty sure God would have gone, no, the Amalekites are coming to attack your city. Stay where you are. Would have been a very easy deal. Submit your plans to God. It doesn't mean don't make plans. Make plans, but submit them to God. Saying, God, right, here's what I'm planning to do. What about it? Yes or no? And it's good to seek the advice of other people too. Proverbs says, you know, there's wisdom in many counselors. As I got here, but the wise man will also submit his plans to God. Make the plans, get other people's advice on them. It's very practical, but submit them to God. I kind of find in our life, God's more of a red light God. I'm not saying this is theologically correct. I'm just saying I found for me, God's a red light God. So quite often God's quite silent, I find, a lot of the time. You ask him stuff and there's kind of no answer. So, but I found he stops me when something's about to go wrong. There's always something, there's some very clear signal of don't do that. Yeah. But, yeah. Oh, I've got a little note here about the journey. So one of the interesting things for me is on our journey, is this whole submitting your plans. So we have this business, basically, and a lot of you know about it. Some of you are involved in it. So, and it's been, we've been really struggling the past 2 years. It's really been just a journey of discovery, discovering how much that you can take on and frustrations and so on. And it seems like we overcome one problem just to be faced with a new one. And without a doubt, some of those problems are due to my dumb decisions. No doubt about it, but you learn. And the nice thing about God is he doesn't condemn you for a dumb decision. He just goes, yeah, we'll pick you up, we'll keep you going. Other problems just seem to come without an invitation. Life's like that. Problems will just come. And here's the deal for us. This is something, so when I've been talking to Pastor Nigel, we meet occasionally, and we just talk about this. Here's one of the things, and I meet with Jonathan Cowdy as well. He's been a great kind of mentor coach, which has been good, and we've talked about this as well. And quite often he says to me, he's actually asked me, he says, should you still be doing the business? And I get this all the time, you know, just people asking, and it's really good actually to get asked that question. And we've had a lot of opportunities to bail out on our business, to basically sell it or just to stop it. We've had some pretty good job offers where we'd be looking at twice the money and, you know, it'd be actually a lot better. Here's the thing, in the back of my head is, I've got this word from Pastor Andrea that's sitting there, and I've just got in my heart, this is what you're called to do. And every time I talk to God about it, I basically get this word, hang in there, which is, I know about you, it really doesn't do much. It's like, well, great, I'm hanging, just, you know, a little bit more information would be great here, but that's the word I get, hang in there. And I say that because I know a lot of you will be on journeys and there is a struggle with it and you'll be struggling with, there's an easy out, but the journey is sometimes hard. And the word that God will give you is just hang in there. There's nothing more than hang in there. You've been called to go on a journey. And and what can I say to you? Hang in there. Just hang in there. You know, it says, having done all to stand, stand. When you've done everything you know how to do, what to do, just stand. Right? It's the best thing you can do. So verse 9, let me move on. Verse 9, so David went, and he and the 600 men who were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those stayed who were... I've jumped ahead a bit here. Oh, no, I have. That's not verse 9, 10. Have we got verse 9, 10 somewhere? I can look it up. Oh, no, I can't. Let me just talk about the journey. So they basically went to pursue this troop, and they came to this brook, and this river, and basically there's 600 men, but 200 of them were just so weary. They'd been traveling for 3 days already. They'd gone out to meet the Philistines, so basically a three-day journey out, 3 days journey back to Ziklag, where they found this burnt city, and then they started pursuing. So basically now you're talking over 6 days, probably 7-8 days of just hard travel that these men had done. And so 200 of them just couldn't go on. And so they basically stayed behind at the brook while the other 400 men went on and they pursued the Amalekites. And so my sixth point is this. People who start the journey with you may not finish it with you. Yeah? So people, sometimes you're on a journey, there'll be a group of you doing the journey, but people who start the journey with you may not finish it with you, and that's okay. It's actually an okay thing because they have their own journeys to go on. And we find all the time, it's staff change and, you know, blah, blah, blah. I haven't changed my wife. My wife hasn't changed her husband. We're hanging in there. She's not smiling. But people who start the journey with you may not finish it with you. There's seasons that we go through. And there's seasons to what you do as well on the journey. So this church is on a journey. I've had seasons in this church of doing different things. It's just the way it goes. So I started just playing guitar, took over as music director, stopped that, took over as young adults pastor, you know, and stopping that soon too. So, you know, it's been a journey. And so even within that journey, there's been changes happening. But you know what? People who start the journey with you may not finish it with you. The journey is yours. You own that journey. Just be aware of that. So moving on, verse 11. So they'd gone on, and then they found an Egyptian in the field, and they brought him to David, and they gave him bread, and he ate, and they let him drink water. And they gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. Rough, isn't it? Dear God, I'd like a Whopper. Exactly. God, what the... cake of figs. So when he had eaten and his strength came back to him, who knows how with that, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk water for 3 days and three nights, then David said to him, "To whom do you belong and where are you from?" And he said, "I'm a young man from Egypt, servant of an Amalekite. And my master left me behind because 3 days ago I fell sick." Which kind of tells you they're 3 days behind the Amalekites at this point. Yeah. "We made an invasion of the southern area of the Cherethites and the territory which belongs to Judah and of the southern area of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire." And David said to him, you kind of wonder if the Egyptian knew who he was talking to at this point, because I wouldn't be admitting to it. And David said to him, can you take me down to this troop? So he said, "Swear to me by God that you will neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will take you down to this troop." My seventh point is this. You often get help from unexpected people and unexpected places. And the journey itself will take unexpected turns on the way. You know, in fact, that diagram explains a lot, I reckon. That's generally what you think success looks like. It's a gradual build-up. The reality of a journey is that it just goes all over the place and you don't know where you are at any point in time. But you get to the end at some point. Don't ever rule out how God can work. He can speak through anyone, and I really mean that, anyone. Quite often we limit that to someone who's in a church, but I've literally heard people at a workplace where someone's been swearing at me and they've said something. I go, gee, that's a word from God, you know. It's something that's triggered, and God can talk through anyone. He can talk through anything, really. I've heard amazing stories of people seeing billboards and going, "God's speaking to me," and maybe he is, maybe he isn't, I don't know, but you know. You know, there's a story in the Bible of God talking to through a donkey. You know, God's not limited what he can speak to you through, how he can and move things. He can use whatever he wants. And the real point about this is don't ever put God in a box, but how he talks to you, how he moves in your life. He can use whatever he wants, and he will do whatever it takes to get you where you need to go. And God is not limited in the what. He is very interested in the why, though. He's interested in you. He's interested in what you're going through. That journey is very important. I always think this, to get to the end of the journey, God could probably just pluck us out and put us there. That would be quite an easy deal, you know. A lot of these times you go on these journeys, you think, God, why don't you just bang, you know, $1 billion, that would do it. You can do it. Why not? Because the journey itself is quite important. He's interested in the why. Why are we going through this? How are we going to react? He's not limited in the what. God will sometimes take you to places you never thought you'd go. And there are seasons to our lives, you know. We have seasons where we do different things. And so in terms of our journey, this is probably the main one for us. So as many of you know, we're on our journey, and we're actually not leaving the church. We're moving out for a season. So Wendy and I and our family, we're actually moving up to Hong Kong in about 4 or 5 weeks' time. And that's part of our journey, part of our business. And it's a bit of a sad thing, but it's also a bit of a good thing as well. It's a season. And this is one of those cases where I was really unsure if it was the right thing to do. We actually pained over this for quite a while. And so I talked to quite a few people, talked to Pastor Nigel, went to lunch, and you know, I suggested do this. This was really hard to do. It was kind of John Fincaldi talking to me about this, but go to your pastor. If you have a plan where it affects the church, because we're on a journey of church here and we're doing a lot of stuff here. So I went out with Pastor Nigel. I said, here's our plans. What do you think? If you tell me it's not right, then we won't do it. You know, if you have leaders over you, it's no point having them as leaders if you don't listen to what they say, or if you only listen when they say things that you agree with. You have to listen to them when they say things you don't agree with. That's the point of having a leader over you. And so that's a really open, raw place to be, because at this point we'd already made up our minds, like, yeah, this is going to be great, and we'd work through it, and we thought this is the right thing, and so on. But then to go there and think, this one person with their one decision, if they're not hearing from God, because we believe it's of God. you know, but that's the point of leaders. Get people over you who you will listen to. And as I said, if you have someone in your life, choose carefully who you let be a leader over your life and who you let speak into your life. But when you have chosen that person, you should be willing to do what they say even when you disagree with it. Yep, that's the point of it. Because they may be seeing things from an angle that you don't know, or it may just be God speaking to them. God may be speaking to you through them. Listen to your leaders. So part of our journey, and you know, part of this was actually to let those know who didn't know already, that Wendy and I we're going to be moving to Hong Kong, and it's just for a season. So we've kind of capped that at around 2 years, 18 months, 2 years, and it's purely to do with our business, and a great opportunity for our kids, to be honest, just to experience a different culture. We will still be involved in this church, so talking about different things we can do while we're up there. So we still feel like we're a part of C3 Fremantle. It's just that we'll be living in a different location. So we'll get back here when we can. But that's a season we need to go through. And yeah, kind of, I'm almost a bit bummed I'm going to miss Wellard though. <It's>, yeah, I'll be back. Yeah. So moving on. Verse 16. And so... Oh, when he had brought him, so talking about the Egyptians, so, and when he had brought him down there, there they were, the Amalekites, spread out over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil which they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. Then David attacked them from twilight until evening of the next day. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. There they go again. There's always someone escaping of the Amalekites. Here's the thing. I was wondering in the Bible, when it said twilight till evening of the next day, I was wondering if that's some odd wording. You know, the Bible has odd wording on some things. I thought, wonder how long that was. So I read some commentaries, and it literally was from morning until the evening of the next day. 36 hours is what most commentators say that the battle went on for. He fought them for that long. It's probably a very smart move on David's part that he attacked them in the morning, because if you think about it, they were partying and drinking the day before. He probably just let them get hung over. yeah, try and sleep it off. We'll attack you after 1 hour sleeping, yeah. But it's still 36 hours they went to battle. Remember, it was David and 400 men against all these Amalekites. And given that 400 Amalekites escaped, you'd imagine there was a lot more that actually stayed and fought. So you probably need everything on his side. So my eighth point is this, fight. Got to chuck the cats in there, don't you? So, I was looking on the internet, there's pictures of cats everywhere. But my eighth point is this, fight. You've got to fight. You will need to fight for your vision. You will need to fight longer than you expected. You will need to fight harder than you want. You will need to sustain more pressure than you think you can handle. And you will endure. You know, if you're fighting a vision that God has given you and you're locked into God, you will endure, but it's going to be harder than you thought. I've got written here, the vision will cost you more money, time, effort, money, sleep, time, money, blood, sweat, tears, money, time, and money than you thought it should. Yeah? Whatever journey you start out with and you think I've got it all planned, nah. This is not biblical, it's just experience, I reckon. Journeys are always just a lot harder than you think they are. I wonder if God's got some sick sense of humor about this. But but basically, God's stretching you, isn't he? He's putting you under a fire. It's like, you know, that potter's wheel. He speaks of making the clay and, you know, and it's all good. You know, God's molding you and so on. But when he puts you on a shelf, he's drying you out and you think, yeah, I'm just hanging here. I'm waiting for my time. But what happens to the pot is not that it then gets used. It gets put into fire. You know, and quite often we go through this time of molding, that's okay. We get shaped about in the church. Sometimes we're just on hold and we're thinking we're waiting for it to come. But quite often you'll get, it's under fire, it's under that pressure, and that's where the cracks start showing. And that's a lot of this journey is about that. It's about developing you. As I said, God could probably put you at the end of the journey, but it's actually about developing you. And in my notes. Moving on. Verse 18. So David recovered all the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives, and nothing of theirs was lacking, either small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything which they had taken from them. David recovered all. He didn't recover 90%, didn't recover 95%, didn't recover 99%, he recovered all 100%. In fact, if you read on, he recovered more than that because he got the spoils. Every person got everything returned to them they had, plus there was enough left over that David then went and shared it across people in Judah and Israel and so on. He sent it out as gifts to people. There was so much more that he got from this. So my ninth point is this, God will restore all, which I will leave as a point on its own. God is a God of restoration. He will bring back what has been lost. He'll restore you to your original calling. Quite often we get distracted on our journey that we're going on. You know, there's things go wrong. For whatever reason, we stumble on the way. God will restore you back to your original calling. You are never. It's never too late to get back on that journey. You can never be too old. I'm getting to an age where that's getting closer to home, by the way. But, you know, it's easy to say when you're like, you know, 15, oh, yeah, you've still got time to get back on track. But actually, you're never too old to get back on track with God. He can do amazing things in 2 months, you know. Time's not a limiting factor to him. You know, David, you know, you can see God talking to David and said, David, you made some dumb decisions. You lost everything for yourself and your men. No problem. You can have it all back. Once David had turned around and came to him, no problem. And, you know, and basically God said, here's a heap extra. You know, you recover all plus from. So just to make this point, it was David's dumb decisions that got him to where he was and losing everything, not just for him, but for all the men he led. But as soon as he turned around to God, God said, no problem. You know, it wasn't my fault, but I can restore everything that you lost and I can give you extra. You know, the story of Job is a story of that. Basically, there's Job and the fact that he, you know, he went on a journey and he hung in there with God and he lost everything in the process, you know, and God said, no problem. You can have it all back. In fact, I'll double it, everything. Wow. He doubled the whole lot. Job was a rich man. If you ever go through and work out how much he had, he was rich. Human destiny is a story. So the Bible itself, basically from Genesis to Revelation, is a story of restoration. It's a story of redeeming humankind. And so, you know, the story of Garden of Eden is basically, you know, God used to come down. So here's Adam and Eve, and they had the garden. They were meant to have dominion over the earth. It was their earth and so on. And you imagine God coming down one day, and they're hiding. And he goes, what's the story? And they're going, oh, we made a stupid mistake. We've basically sold ourselves and we threw away the keys to the house. We, you know, we've given away the earth. Everything we have is lost. And what did God do? He just goes, no problem. He goes, I've got a better plan. He goes, I'm going to buy you back. I'll pay the cost for your life. And he goes, and in terms of where to live, you can come live at my house now. Yeah? So no more was it God coming down to earth to visit with people. He said, you know what? You can come and live in my house. It's much bigger. The restoration was so much better than the original plan. Wow. Yeah. So when God restores, he restores better than the original. yeah. Got here. God said, you can live at my place. You'll like it. It's big. Yeah. So I just want to end this with one story. That was my subtle signal to Bremer. And it's this, and this is my daughter. Wisdom comes from my daughter. Because I'd written down this note, the journey is not finished until it's finished. And so she was reading over me, she came and looked, she goes, what does that mean? That's just dumb. And so I was talking to her, I said, let me ask you a question. When's your homework finished? She had a little sheet she was doing. I said, is it finished when you're so tired that you can't do any more and you just want to go to bed? She goes, nah. I said, well, is it finished when you've done all the questions that you know how to do, but there's still some unanswered? She goes, no. I said, so when's it finished? She goes, it's finished when it's finished. I said, and that's the point. When is your journey finished? It's finished when it's finished. If you get what I mean by that, it's not finished when you decide you've had enough. It's not finished at that point. It's not finished at the point where we've done everything we can. It's actually not finished at that point. You know, when you've done everything you can, just stand. You know, God will bring you through it. The vision is not finished until you reach the destination you set out for. It's not finished until the vision is achieved. I was going to say, it's not finished when other people say it is either. Yeah, if God set you on a journey, you'll know when it's finished. You and God will know when it's finished. The journey's not finished either when you're traveling alone. I made that point because some of you might have started the journey out with people and you'll be standing alone on your journey. It's not finished because people have fallen away at the sides. The journey's finished when it's finished. So I want to say this. Pat, let's stand up. I want to wipe this up. And music team, you guys can come up. Yeah. I want to say this just to wrap up, is don't compromise on your journey. Sometimes you'll feel like giving up, but don't. Sometimes you will pause. Having a rest every now and then is actually a good thing. You know, if you're on a journey, it's getting hard, have a rest. But don't dwell there. Don't stay in the rest place. The story of Abraham going to Canaan, if any of you have read this, Abraham wasn't the one who set out from Babylon, wherever it was. It was actually his father, Terah, who set out on the journey. The Bible actually says, Terah set out to go to the land of Canaan and came to the land called Haran. And he stayed there, and he dwelt there, and he died there. So he came to a place, Haran, and he was only ever meant to stop for a rest there. But what he did, he made that the place that he lived, and then he died there. He died without ever achieving the end of his journey. And basically, Abraham picked up his journey and went to Canaan. That was where God had been calling him. So don't stop. You may imagine if Jesus had stopped just before the cross. Imagine, because he did some amazing things, and there would have been stories about him and books written and so on, but the journey wouldn't have been complete. We wouldn't have been here today because the journey hadn't been completed. It wouldn't have been anything wrong. The journey wouldn't have been completed. You know, there's power in finishing a journey. So what I want to do today, and I'm going to leave you with a challenge about this, is that where are you on your journey? And, but let's close our eyes. Let's pray. I just want to get into the zone. And so I just want to challenge you, just so you're hearing me, is that where are you on your journey? Are you in a place that, I imagine most of us are in this place, we're actually in a journey right now, but are you in a place that you're really struggling? Have you given up on that journey? You know, is there something that has stopped you from achieving, something you set out from years and years ago, maybe, you know, a year ago, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there was something, there was a calling where God had called you on a journey, and, you know, is there something since then that has stopped you from achieving that journey? It's taking you off the path. Are you dwelling in a place that you shouldn't be dwelling? You know, is there a calling that you know is on your life, but you're not living in it? What is it that has stopped you? I'm not really going to call anyone out for this. I want to challenge you with that, because there's no better time than now to be saying to God, you know what? Yeah, I started on this journey. For whatever reason, I've stopped it. I want to give it to you. As I said, you can't alter your past. You can bring that past to the altar. You can bring it to God and say, yeah, okay, I got off track. I want to sort that. And so while we're in the zone, you guys can start singing if you want. I just want to spend some time in prayer this morning. And I have this other challenge. And it's about complacency, that we quite often accept things that really are not the kingdom of God. And so, and here's the thing that's been sitting on my mind, and two people I want to pray for this morning is this. So I'm going to ask, if that's okay, Stu and Jess. Here's the deal, and I do this as a challenge to the church. My challenge is this: since when did it become acceptable in God's house that someone would be in a wheelchair? It's a really tough call, isn't it? And so, and don't think I'm embarrassing Stu. I actually did ask him if I could do this, so please hear me on this. It's actually not about Stu, funnily enough. It's about us. When did it become acceptable? We walk in the church and go, yeah, that's okay. We have the power of God in us. And I'm not saying, so what I'm going to do, Greg and maybe a few other people, if you can start praying for Stu and Jess, that'd be great. Go for it. Whether Stu gets healed today or not is not the question. It's the fact that we are going on that journey and we are not accepting it, but we're going to pray. So my final story, personal story is this, is that my parents have been on a journey, some of you will know this, but they've been on a journey for 44 years about a circumstance in our family. And they've been praying and they've done it without failing. They haven't seen an end result yet, but that speaks amazing things to me. That says they have just stuck in there and they expect a good outcome at the end of it. Don't give up on your journey. Don't accept something that's less than what you know should be right. Yeah? So I leave this challenge with you, and I know I'm picking on Stuart a bit, but don't accept things that you see every day. If that's not God's will, if you know someone being in a wheelchair, not being able to walk, is not God's will, why are you accepting it? And me too, you know? That should be something that sits on us. We should be praying through that. And as I said, it's not about maybe it doesn't happen today, but at least it's one step further. At least we've done something. At least we've gone that way. And we'll learn along that journey. And so I want to leave that challenge with you today. Don't get complacent about the journey. Don't accept a compromise. I don't know when your journey will end, but I know that you should be on that journey. And don't give up on it. Yeah. So as these guys sing, as guys pray, I just want to leave it open. If you're on a journey and you're struggling this morning and you just want someone to stand with you in prayer, just come up. Or if you just want to stand here while these guys sing, I just want you to get that prayer. Just to, if it's something to reboot a struggle or a journey that you're on, come up. There's some guys here who will pray with you. Otherwise, I will hand it over to these guys to sing.
Above my circumstance, it's you I will.